the Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. Our guest today on the program is Frank Isak. He is author of Silver Age Yoga, The Benefits of Yoga in Preparing You for Retirement and Keeping You Healthy During It. He'll be our special guest today on the program. You know, we spend a lot of time on this show talking about retirement, preparing for retirement, what to do once you're retired. Here's a hint. Don't play golf. Do something more worthwhile. You can tell where my sentiments line up on that one.
I trust you're not a golfer.
I am not a golfer. My father-in-law is an avid golfer, and they live on a golf course in Phoenix, and they're retired.
Well, I live on a golf course, and I don't play, but I get plenty of golf balls in my backyard.
Well, that's just the hazards of living there, I guess. Anyway, we have talked about also not only what to do when you're retired, what happens after your post-retirement period, taking care of your estate after you have passed on. We have discussed numerous surveys about retirement, how confident retirees are about their retirement, their investments, and how well they have prepared. And today we're going to combine these studies with what retirees have said about their own retirement experience and combine it with a checklist, which you should consider whether you have a plan, no plan, doing it yourself, or working with an advisor. And hopefully you'll gain some insight from the experience of others and avoid some of the common pitfalls that trap so many retirees, because the best predictor of the future is always the past. And sometimes it helps to talk to people who have walked along the same road upon which you are walking.
This is one of the reasons, John, I think a lot of these surveys, and you know, we get them every year, but you're going to see more of them because, once again, you have 10,000 baby boomers retiring on a daily basis. But there have been a number of surveys done on retirement, and probably the most comprehensive survey that's done each year is done by the Employee Benefit Research Institute. Now, looking at this year's survey, I was struck by the degree of confidence that is growing among retirees. And I think that's obviously a reflection of rising asset prices. We've seen, you know, the S&P 500 go from 666 to over 2000. Housing prices are back on the rise. So people are feeling more confident because asset markets are coming back. But what was surprising was the amount of regrets expressed by many individuals looking back at their own retirement. In other words, things that they would have done differently. So that is what we want to cover today, which is to share what others have learned so that you won't have many of these same regrets.
Well, let's get right into it. I suspect a chief regret would be not having enough money or having made the right investment decisions would probably come to the top of the list.
Well, actually, quite honestly, the biggest regret is retiring and leaving the workforce too early. I mean, many individuals do so for reasons, you know, one could be for health, either their own health or that of a loved one. However, of those who do retire voluntarily, on their own volition, end up being surprised at how much it costs to live in retirement. Even worse is the difficulty they face as they age in gaining reentry. So let's say you retired at age 62 and you're thinking at 65, wow, I can't believe how much it cost me to retire. You try to go back into the workforce. According to the survey, 69% of adults age 50 and over who have searched for a job said they had difficulty finding one in the last 5 years. A lot of that reflects the poor fiscal policy out of Washington and just a slow growth economy. Not to mention, John, that the pay was lower and many of the jobs offered did not offer benefits in the fact of employer concerns over their age.
Retirement is an ongoing, relentless effort in creativity. Tried yoga, learned to cook, bought some plants, took classes in Mandarin. Believe me, I've tried everything. I just know there's a hole in my life, and I need to fill it.
Okay, Benjamin, I'm going to ask you one of our more telling questions for all of our interns, so I want you to, like, this is the one to really think about, okay? Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
When I'm 80.
Sometimes humor is really illustrative of reality. And, you know, the other aspect of re-entry into the workforce is that many retirees are overqualified for the jobs that are available. And there's a prejudice about that. You know, there's sort of sometimes a secret. You're not supposed to discriminate on the age of race and religion and age and stuff, but it really does happen.
Well, sure, because, I mean, an older employee, the medical costs, let's say a company has a medical plan, or they may have some kind of pension fund, let's say a defined benefit pension plan with some companies, they're still around, that's going to cost a lot of money to put money aside to fund that. So that's something that goes into it, too, is the cost of healthcare, which we'll talk about here in this survey. You know, the next regret is one we've seen, John, numerous times, which is overspending during the first few years of retirement. You know, you retire and you go, okay, let's take those big trips, everything from vacations to recreational toys. At the time the money is spent, it seems like, well, it makes a lot of sense. However, after you're retired, when you think about it, that's what you dreamed about. Hey, now that we're retired, we can travel. We have the time to go to these golf tournaments, buy that motor home, whatever the hobbies that you like to take up. The problem is, as we've talked so many times on this program, is longevity and the cost of health care. Now, the government came out with its own inflation rate for retirees, just as they have for different age groups. And the inflation rate for retirees is 5.8% per year. Now, that comes back to haunt you in the later years when more of your budget is going to be devoted to healthcare costs. Those that thought they would simply just cut back in the latter years failed to think about the added cost of healthcare and the impact of inflation on their living expenses. Now, think about that. You know, let's just make it easy and just say that, for example, you're spending, I don't know, $60,000 a year. We'll put that as your budget. Let's take 10 years. You take 5.8% in 10 years, all of a sudden, you need $105,000. Now, here's another one that'll shock you. We'll take that $60,000 and take a look at this is where it really drives home the point, because if you're spending $60,000 a year, let's say that's $5,000 a month, at a 5.8% inflation rate, in 20 years, you are going to need $185,000. $1,000 to maintain the same standard of living in 20 years. The average lifespan between a couple age 65 is 25 years. So if you're spending 60 now, that sounds great. You know, maybe you're taking the trips, you have a little extra money to do that. You buy the motor home or you buy a sailboat, whatever it is that you like to do in your free time. Remember, at close to a 6% inflation rate, that adds up quickly. Your cost of living is going to double. Using the rule of 72, it's going to double a little over every 12 years. So imagine $60,000 today, $100,000 10 years from now, $185,000 20 years from now, John. And you can see why this has caught a lot of retirees by surprise, and they end up downsizing, which is something you don't want to do when you get older.
Well, you know, in the case of my mother, she was going like gangbusters till almost 90. She was living very independently for a while, but then all of a sudden got congestive heart failure as a result of aging, etc. And one of the problems that we had is that my father, who had passed away 26 years earlier, had set her up with, at the time, what were very good investments, largely in treasuries, which you remember, Jim, back in the 70s and 80s were doing really terrifically.
Oh, gosh, I can remember when you could get 15% on treasuries.
Right. And my mother kept trying to live off of this as the events changed, so she hadn't been making adjustments as she needed to be. And then finally, we had to have assisted living, etc. Now, we had a very special plan, but I wouldn't recommend it for people that helped us, and that was we burned her house down.
Well, that was California fires.
That was the California wildfires, and so we had a large amount of insurance money that came from that, and that was able to aid us in making new investments to compensate for what my mother had not been doing, because she didn't know much about finance. My father was an accountant, and he had set these up before his passing, and I didn't think about it at the time. But we eventually had to bring her in, and she required X amount of care. At one point, we required 24-hour nursing and things like that. But for the most part, it was living here with her kids. And by the way, that's happening in reverse, too, in the millennial generations. They're at home more. Families or different levels of families are having to live together, which is not necessarily a bad thing, by the way. But these are the things that do happen to you. and as time goes by, because sooner or later, somebody's going to need care, everybody.
Yeah, sooner or later, maybe you get fortunate and you die in your sleep, but that's usually not the general outcome for most couples. And so, John, spending a lot of money in the early years of retirement without thinking of the consequences of almost a 6% inflation later on in life can really come back to bite you. The next regret was not traveling earlier in retirement when you are healthy and mobile. As people age, depending on health and fitness, they become less agile and mobile. And experts say there are two times to travel in retirement. When you're healthy, let's say the first 5 years. Now, if after those first 5 years, you're still in great shape, that's the second time that you get to travel. And that is usually an extra period that where you're able to travel. You know, some people are able to travel the first 10, 15 years, depending on their health. But generally in this survey, they found the first 5 years were usually the best. When you first retire, you still, both of you have your health. So you do the traveling. Later on, if you don't do the traveling those first 5 years, as you age and you run into some disabilities or difficulties, maybe you're less agile, you have some kind of disease that takes place, whether it's heart disease or arthritis or something that makes it more difficult. And that was one of the regrets, that, you know, they didn't do more travel in the early years when they were both healthy.
You know, and one warning I'd throw in is just make sure that, you know, if you do have the funds to do so without dipping into your principal, the monies you will need later on to handle inflation and medical costs. And that's important to anticipate that. All right. If we look at regrets, one thing I know I regret is that I didn't know as much as I know now about finance and stuff when I was younger. Because when you're younger, you think, I'm going to live forever and there's not going to be a problem. And I would have started earlier doing what I needed to do. But what's next on the list of regrets here?
The next regret is something new, and I think this is a reflection of the last decade. We see financial repression, quantitative easing. We've had two bear markets in the stock market. We had a bear market in real estate, and that is unrealistic investment returns. Now, if you retired in, let's say, the 90s, the markets were going up double digits, interest rates were double digits. John, I can remember first 10 years of my career in the investment business, basically the 80s. I mean, we were basically doing fixed income. I mean, I could get 13, 14% on Ginnie Mae's. We were getting 9% on double tax-free bonds. I mean, utility stocks were paying 12, 14%. I mean, who in the heck wanted stocks when you were getting 12% at the bank and a free toaster? But, you know, that's what people were doing. They were investing in, you know, like your mother, in treasuries that your father set up, CDs at banks. But that ended in the year 2000. For the next 13 years, remember this, until April of 2013, the S&P 500 virtually went nowhere from January 1st, 2000 till April 2013. It would take that long, 13 years, for the S&P to surpass the record set in March in the year 2000. So the stock market went nowhere for 13 years. And remember, in the bursting of the tech bubble, Greenspan brought interest rates down to 1%, created another bubble, which led to the financial crisis. And then Bernanke brought interest rates down to zero, where they've been for 7 years. Now, today, you get nothing in money market funds. I just looked prior to going on the air. In the year 2000, you got 5 to 6% in a money market fund. Today, the yield on money market funds is 0.3%. The yield on a 5-year CD nationally is less than 1.5%. When you thought about, you know, 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, you could have got 6 or 7%. The yield on a 2-year treasury note is 0.6% versus 6%. In a 3-month treasury bill, gosh, I can remember I could get 5 and 6% on 3-month treasury bills. Today, a 3-month treasury bill, the kind of things your mom invested in, John, yield less than 0.1%. So savers and retirees have been hit pretty hard by the Fed's policies of quantitative easing. And what it's doing, it's forcing many to go out on the risk curve in search of a yield. I mean, the days of 10 to 12% returns are over and obviously not sustainable. So a lot of these pie chart retirement plans and retirement assumptions are based on unrealistic expectations. and you should think twice if your advisor or plan are basing your retirement on double-digit returns or historical returns. That's not the era that we live in today.
Yeah, I remember when security was the name of the game in retirement. A lot of people work for the same company for their entire life, pension, you know, the whole bit. And even if you didn't, you could keep rolling the pensions over and finally have some security. But those days are somewhat gone. I mean, quantitative easing, financial repression, it caught a lot of people by surprise. A lot of people are busy with their careers. You know, they don't quite understand all of this stuff. We had nearly three decades of double-digit or high single-digit returns. So, having said all of that, what's next on the list?
Not planning for leisure time, believe it or not. This really impacts men who have the bulk of their, let's say, relationships associated with the work. You know, you go out with the people you work with, they become your friends, and then you retire, which, you know, a lot of those relationships are lost many times after retirement. People go their separate ways. They move to different areas of the country. When you retire, you really need a reason to get out of bed every morning, get dressed, and go do something. If you don't, you'll find yourself getting bored or becoming miserable. You know, in my own case, I had the chance to retire in 2001, 2003, and again in 2008. And I can remember in 2003, you know, we take the month of August off, and I sat around. And John, I just absolutely got bored. I remember one day I went sailing every single day. I got a new race boat, and I used to race sailboats. And I was racing, and I was sailing. After the seventh day of sailing, I got bored. I wanted to do something different. I had the chance to retire again in 2008. Quite honestly, I got bored. I mean, what do you do when you love what you do for work? The people you work with, your clients. So I wouldn't trade what I do for retirement. You know, I think you and I are going to be at this, you know, for the next 15, 20 years, John, until, you know, we get decrepit and we don't make sense to people.
My wife tells me that I'll stop being on radio when they pry the microphone from my cold, dead hands.
You like what you're doing. I do. I mean, I wake up each day, I love the fact that in our field that we're always learning something. So a good plan is always to have a few hobbies or two or three of them, or you might want to consider a volunteer gig in the community, even a part-time job to keep your mind active and engaged in the community. I had a client who was a editor for one of the major publishing companies, retired out here to California, got tired of the winters in New York, and lived up Northern California, right around the Hearst Castle. He went to Hearst Castle, and Johnny ended up becoming a guide. He got a part-time job. He loved it, got to meet people, and it just made his retirement so much more meaningful. So, you know, one of the things I'm thinking of taking up is bridge in another foreign language. So these are the kind of things that you want to do, is make sure you have some hobbies, and especially you men out there where a lot of your relationships are built up around work, you want to make sure that the day you retire, you have new friendships, new things that are going to keep your mind, body active. We've had Dr. Gary Small from the UCLA Longevity Center here on the program, and one of the things he talks about is challenging your brain, because dementia and Alzheimer's, 75% of that has a lot to do with lifestyle. So the more active you are, statistically, they've shown people that are more active and engaged live longer and they're healthier. So if you're thinking of retiring, you don't have a hobby, think of some things you'd like to do, whether it's volunteer work or an activity you'd like to take up that's going to make that retirement much more meaningful.
And just for our listeners, the future portions of the program will be brought to you in Chinese spoken with a Spanish accent. And any other regrets, Jim? Por favor.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Anyway, let's move on. The last regret is one that we've addressed here on the program the last few weeks and months, which is drawing on Social Security too earlier. Now, we've discussed over the last few weeks the major financial advantages of waiting as long as possible if you are able to do so. Once again, that depends on longevity, your health, and your financial condition. If you have poor health, or you don't have longevity, or you just don't have the finances, you maybe not have a choice. But typically, if you are able to, your Social Security benefits will be much larger, which is whether it's waiting for until full retirement age, which is today 66 and 67 for boomers, where you can employ strategies we talked about over the last couple of weeks, things like file and suspend, file and restrict, the wait is well worth it. If you can do so, both for yourself and your surviving spouse, it makes a world of difference. It can literally add up to hundreds of thousands of dollars over your retirement lifetime. The benefits could add up to $1,000 to $1,500 more a month, which could be $12,000 to $18,000. I mean, that becomes a significant amount, and especially later on in life when you're going to need it with those rising medical costs. This is so important. And one of the biggest mistakes I see being made today, we're talking, hopefully, that, you know, with the shows that we've done, we would encourage you to take a look at your options between both yourself and your spouse, really discuss them and know what those numbers are going to mean to you when you are looking at taking your Social Security.
Well, hopefully shows we've done on Social Security can guide a lot of listeners in making their best choices in their Social Security plans. I have to admit, until we started doing that ourselves here, I wasn't as informed as I should have been in the area of Social Security, but a lot of it started to make sense after a while listening to the guests talk. And so by encouraging you to have a plan, you then become active in what is revocable and not revocable, what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing in this area. Because let's face it, and this is the other thing you mentioned, we were talking about my mother earlier, as healthcare progressed forward, as one friend of ours who's a nurse that deals in geriatrics, she said it becomes a minefield and you have to have some guidance getting through some of this.
Yeah, because really, without knowing these options, you know, file and suspend, and we talked about, and I want to bring this point up again. We talked about this 2 weeks ago. If you took your Social Security age 62, you have a chance to amend that when you reach full retirement age, and let's say that's 66. What you could do is at age 66 is file and suspend your Social Security, in which case your Social Security benefit would grow by an 8% guaranteed rate for the next 4 years until age 70. I mean, how many people right now can put money in an investment and come out with a guaranteed 8% return? You just can't find it in today's market. So you do have a chance to go back and correct that mistake. But John, this is one thing that you really want to do, is make sure that you know these options. And especially for you women that are listening to this program, discuss this with your husband and discuss it together and know your options, because 83% of the beneficiaries of Social Security are people like yourself, women. So if you can employ a strategy, because if you're getting Social Security, your husband's getting Social Security, the problem is when one spouse passes away, in most cases, that's the husband that passes on first, you're going to give up your Social Security and you're going to get your husband's. So if you can employ a strategy like file and suspend with your husband's Social Security, where it grows at 8% a year, and you use file and restrict on your own, you're both going to maximize your Social Security benefits. And at the same time, you are going to maximize your benefit as a surviving spouse. Let's assume that your husband passes on first, then you're going to lose one benefit. So that way you would get the largest benefit, which would be your husband's, which would be 132% of his benefit if he took it at age 66 versus allowing it to grow to age 70. So those are just some things that you really want to focus on. Now, I want to consider the next option, which is, you're thinking of retirement. Think about this. Let's say you want to get a motor home. You want to take the big trip. Quite honestly, you would be better off considering spending that money while you're working, let's say 5 years before you retire. So you spend a little extra money before you retire when you are still working and you have the income to afford it. This can include everything from, you know, taking those big trips that you want to take to toys, buying a motorhome, boat. Also think about this, home repairs, or, you know, getting yourself an excellent car. So the day you retire, the home you're living in is in up-to-date repair. You have a good car. You took the big expensive trip. You bought the home. But consider doing that 5 years before you retire rather than after you retire, where you're drawing down some income and you're spending a lot of money that you can regret later on when medical costs start going up.
Right. Well, home ownership, good cars, and major travel is definitely much more affordable when your cash flow is at a peak. Now, what other considerations should be examined when we're covering this topic.
The other one before you retire, and this is the gotcha, taxes is another aspect that should be planned for, especially if you're in a bracket where most of your retirement income is taxable, such as, let's say, you have a pension, Social Security, and required minimum distributions from your IRAs. Remember, that starts at age 70 and a half. If you're allowing your IRA to accumulate, 70 and a half, Uncle Sam comes in and says, no more. You got to start taking money. And each year you get older, your distributions are going to go up, which means your taxable income is going to go up. So you might want to look at things like conversion to Roth IRAs that become tax-free, things like municipal bonds or tax-favored dividends from stocks, or things like immediate annuities that could be 70 to 80% sheltered from taxation. You don't want to find yourself in a situation where your income is all taxable, or you find yourself in a higher tax bracket, believe it or not, as you get older, because you're going to start taking more and more money out of that IRA that begins at age 70 and a half. And, you know, you think about a decision that could add up to several thousands of dollars with life expectancies increasing and expanding. It just makes a lot of financial sense to make the most money for the longest period of time for someone or even a couple who are in good health. So, John, a lot of times we'll see people that get themselves in permanent tax traps. Let's say they took a pension from the company. That's 100% taxable. They're in a bracket as a married couple where 50 to 85% of their Social Security is taxable. Then they have their IRAs at age 70 and a half. They have to start taking minimum distributions that go up each year. That's all taxable. And many people find themselves, you know, 5, 6, 8, 10 years into retirement, finding themselves in higher tax brackets than when they're working. So taxes can be a very important element pre-planning before you retire.
Okay, any more regrets from the survey that you would say that are really important to consider here if we wish to avoid those pitfalls?
That's pretty much covered. We covered all the main ones, and, you know, those are the key things. Having hobbies, retiring too early, decisions on Social Security, or spending money too early. Those are the kind of things you really want to think through, because this survey, the thing that I picked up is it was not just, you know, this is what people think, feeling confident about the markets. It's also people that looked at their retirement and said, you know, if I was to start this all over, I would have done things differently.
I'm a big fan of checklists here of important do's and maybe some don'ts that I would say are probably going to be crucial before you make the decision to retire that can help you avoid trouble. And checklists, you know, people put a lot of books, Jim, and they're just full of verbiage. And sometimes that's important, but the best thing people can always have are checklists. You know, here's the things you got to do. You go down that checklist. Once you've done it, you've done it.
Well, you know, if you want a checklist before you retire, this is probably the most important one. You need to learn and distinguish between revocable and irrevocable choices regarding the big financial decisions, such as, for example, when you're going to take Social Security, or, for example, pension options you choose regarding the company pension, whether you take it as a lump sum rolled over to an IRA, or if you take it in a series of annuity payments over your life or that of your spouse. Because once the decision is made, it becomes irrevocable, especially in Social Security. Now, we did point out that if you took it at age 62, you do have an option 4 years later or 5 years later when you turn age 66 and 67 to file and suspend, which will give you a chance to make up for that mistake. But even decisions such as retirement housing, for example, we're seeing a lot of people get into these retirement home situations where you put up a bunch of money into a retirement home. The money, you can't get it back, so you're stuck with it, and you put in a whole bunch of money out of your retirement nest egg. And unfortunately, with low returns in the market, you don't have the money to stay there or keep there. We've seen many situations like that. So you really need to analyze before you jump and make these decisions. Look at the consequences of something that could become irrevocable, and then you're stuck with it the rest of your retirement years.
Okay, what about company benefit plans, options, various choices?
You know, some of these things, and this really applies to what we call highly compensated employees, executives, a lot of companies have a non-qualified deferred compensation plans where basically, instead of giving you the big bonus at the end of the year, which gets taxed at 50 to 60%, you're highly compensated, the money goes into a deferred compensation program. And companies can discriminate in favor of higher paid executives. And what this does is it can allow you to retire and take that deferred comp payout over a 5 or 10 year period, which sets you up ideally for making the better decisions on your Social Security benefits or your IRA benefits. And, you know, we've had a number of plans with highly compensated executives where we're taking out their deferred comp over a 10-year plan, and then we're combining that with maximizing Social Security strategies with file suspend and file and restrict, and then also allowing IRAs or converting things to Roth IRAs. So this is something that if you're a highly paid executive, I would strongly encourage you, in addition to the company's 401k program, to look into the deferred comp program. We have a lot of clients who work for some of the big oil companies. In most of the big oil companies, I don't care if you're looking at Exxon, Chevron, have deferred compensation programs for some of these highly paid engineers and executives that can make a world of difference when you retire, because then you can draw down that deferred comp over a period of time, keep yourself in a low bracket, avoid paying the high taxes when you're in those high tax bracket years, your earning years, and then take that money out in a lower tax bracket when you're retired, maximize your Social Security benefits and your IRAs. John, a world of difference that can make in anybody's retirement plan.
Let's see if we can put this all together, everything we've discussed today. These are regrets people had, and so you should avoid them yourself. Number one, retiring too early. I would probably add on to that, Jim, not planning to do good things during retirement. Having a purpose in life is really important, even if you're retired. One gentleman I knew retired from his job, was in the financial industry, and went to live in the Philippines working with an elderly lady who had started an orphanage there, and they were just loving it. And that was their purpose in life. The second one is overspending in your first years of retirement, not leaving enough for later. You're trying to average this out. Number three, not traveling when you're in good health, because you can always assume that sooner or later health begins to decline. Number four, an unrealistic investment expectation. You know, whatever the environment happens to be at any given point, you have to be realistic in your expectation of what you're going to get on returns. Five, not having a plan to take leisure time, especially if you're going to work into retirement. It's important to play. Number six, people drawing Social Security too early. Now, four things you need to add if you want to say, let's avoid some of these pitfalls. Number one, spend a little extra before retirement on things that will fix things up before you retire that are going to need ongoing maintenance or whatever. Number two, do a tax plan and examine the implications of what your taxes are going to be. Three, distinguish between those decisions you have to make, which are going to be revocable, meaning you can change your mind later on, and those which are irrevocable, which put you on a path from which you cannot return. And number four, if you are a highly compensated individual, you should also consider deferred compensation from the company for which you worked to level out your tax burden. So that's where we are. Every week on the program here, we do a case study, which is drawn from real life. The names of the people are changed to protect your privacy, but it's a real study, so you know that it actually worked. And our people this week are
Jack and Kathy Nordahl. Jack is 60. He's an engineer. And when he came to us for a financial plan, the goal was to retire within 5 years. His wife, Kathy, age 56, a dental hygienist, empty nesters. They sold their big home, paid cash for a house. So when we look on the asset side, their home was worth about $550,000, no mortgage on it, so they were debt-free. Jack's IRA was roughly about $97,000. Kathy's IRA was $56,000. Mutual funds, they had about $230,000 in various mutual funds. Jack's 401k program with matching contributions was about $800,000, and they had roughly about $140,000 in the bank. So total assets, roughly about $1.9 million. Expenses, $60,000 a year. Travel, roughly about $6,000 a year. So roughly close to $70,000 a year. The goal was to retire in 5 years. And their income right now, currently about $180,000. Now, they are into RVs, and they wanted to get a new RV. And I said, you know what? The time to do it is now, if you're going to retire 5 years from now, so that when you do retire, you can pay this thing off. So they were looking at spending $80,000 on getting an upgraded used RV that they liked. And the idea was they would pay it off within 5 years. Now, based on Jack's contributions to his 401k program, plus matching contributions on the first 6% of his salary with the company, we projected that that 401k program of $800,000 would be $1 million. And one of the things that they really wanted that was very important to both Nordahls was that they wanted to make sure that their basic expenses were covered. They didn't want to risk what happened in 2008, what happened in 2000, because it took a number of years before Jack's 401k got back up to where it was. Thank goodness he stayed partially invested in the stock market. So they wanted to make sure that their basic expenses were covered. So what we suggested is now was the time to buy their motorhome because they had 180 grand a year, empty nesters. They could afford with their income to make the payments and just pay that thing off if they wanted to, or heck, just use their cash if they wanted to do that, which they really didn't want to do. Remember, these are boomers that went through two bear markets, including one in real estate. So the first thing we did is we recommend buy the motorhome now. The other thing is we looked at their pension options, and because he was with a major defense contractor, they had a number of options. One would be to roll over the 401k into an IRA, which most companies offer. But we also looked at their pension options, which would be a monthly annuity to Jack and an equal amount to his wife, Kathy. And quite honestly, John, we looked at the annuity options that were being offered. In today's low interest rate environment, where you have 10-year treasuries at 2%, bond funds are at 3% in stock markets, I mean, he would get the equivalent of almost 7% a year if we based it on his life, close to 6% if it was a joint life expectancy, meaning if something happened to Jack, the same pension would go to his wife, Kathy. The plan was, based on the current expectations, and that he went to the personnel department, the plan would be when Jack retired, he would take an annuity payment of his pension plan because that would give him the guaranteed income. It would be close to $5,000 a month. That would cover their major expenses. Now, the thing that I also mentioned, that pension of $5,000 a month was going to be close. All of that was going to be taxable. Then also when they started to receive Social Security. Now, since the pension would take care of their basic living expenses, I recommended that when Jack turns 66, he would do what is called file and suspend, and Kathy would do file and restrict. So they would both get 132% of their Social Security benefits at age 70. However, because his pension was taxable, and at age 66, Kathy's portion of Jack's Social Security would be taxable, and then also at age 70, their IRAs would be taxable. So what we also recommended is when they retire, convert their IRAs to a Roth IRA, which would become tax-free. And when they retire, they would be in a much lower tax bracket because right now they had a free and clear home making 180 grand. They were in a higher tax bracket. Obviously, when they retire, $60,000 versus $180,000, they were going to be in a lower bracket. So we wanted to convert the IRAs to a Roth IRA. And then also, when Jack retires at age 65, he'd have one more year to get his Social Security benefits, at which time he would file and suspend, and Kathy would get Jack's Social Security at that time would be roughly $2,380. Kathy's at age 66 would be $1,400. So what we recommended is at the time that Jack retires, he waits 1 year, files and suspend, and Kathy does file and restrict. She would get half of his Social Security benefits. By then it would be $14,280. We also recommended that we convert the mutual funds. A lot of them were in bond funds, which were taxable at a higher interest rate. Convert them into blue chip dividend paying stocks, which would be taxed at 15% versus their tax bracket with California, which was close to 40%. That would produce roughly about close to $7,000 of income. So at retirement, with the pension that they would get by annuitizing his 401k, that would be close to $59,000. Close to $7,000 from the blue chip, and then, of course, Kathy's one half of her husband's Social Security $14,000. That would give them an income of roughly $80,000. And then later on, because it was a Roth IRA, you don't have to take those distributions. You can allow them to compound tax-free, but at least we would have a portion of their portfolio in tax-free income. And basically, when they started taking Social Security at age 70, or at least when Jack did, we can convert part of the individual stocks to municipal bond portfolio and keep them in a lower bracket. So here was a couple strategies, John. Make the purchase of the major toy, in this case, a brand new used motorhome. Make that 5 years before he retired. Secondly, when he retires, we were going to look at a joint annuity based on Jack and Kathy's life on his 401k program, because I told him there's no way I could go out and get 6% or 7% guaranteed in which the annuity would be. And that was what gave them that comfort. They wanted to make sure their living expenses were covered on a guaranteed basis. They didn't want to go through what they went through in 2000 and go through that again in 2007 and 2009 during the financial crisis. So in this case, we used a number of strategies, the big purchase before they retire, taking an annuity option from the company plan, converting their IRAs to Roths in the year they retired where they'd be in a lower bracket. And then the next one was to basically use file and suspend and file restrict so they would maximize their Social Security benefits. And because we already had a 4-year difference in age between Kathy and Jack, add that to another 4 years of life expectancy for a woman, we would be maximizing the survivor benefits to Kathy, assuming Jack would be the first to pass on.
And as we promised, coming up next on the program, Frank Isak, who is the author of Silver Age Yoga, the benefits of yoga in preparing you for retirement, the health benefits, and keeping you healthy while you're in retirement. And he's someone who should know. Coming up next, as Lifetime Income continues at FinancialSense.com.
You're listening to the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized retirement portfolio.
You know, one of the great advantages about medicine today is Americans are living longer. People, if they retire, can expect to spend 25 to 30 years in retirement. So one thing that's coming along with people living longer is health expenses. Prescription drugs, hospitalization, emergency surgeries, institutionalization, and assisted living. We're going to talk about a means of reducing those costs as the government expects you to pick up more of your medical costs. Joining me on the program from Seiko or Silver Age Yoga is Frank Isak. And Frank, give us a little bit of your background, how you got involved in yoga, and then let's talk about how this applies to seniors today in making them healthier.
I was born in Hungary 40 years ago, and I came to the United States in 1958 after a harrowing escape from communist Hungary, which was at the time Iron Curtain separated from the free world. And eventually I ended up in the United States. I was doing a number of things. I was a chemical engineer by profession, which was a long time. I didn't spend a long time with it. I went into publishing, literature, newspaper reporting, etc. And eventually ended up teaching martial arts. I was teaching and practicing martial arts for decades. And then I got old, like 60-some years old, 62 maybe, when I figured that it's time to step out of the karate ring and get something else going. And reluctantly, I said, maybe yoga is it. It was kind of a letdown after martial arts. And it turned out to be the best thing that happened in my life. Let me tell you, I'm 84 years old. I have Parkinson's disease, and which was detected about 8 years ago. And in spite of that, I teach 2 hours of yoga a day. I practice an hour of yoga. I walk 3 miles, and nobody knows, nobody can detect that I have Parkinson's. And that's all because of yoga. And what can I tell you? Any more proof of the issue that yoga is the most credible preventive medicine that there is. And I am a shining example of it, not trying to brag about, but bringing it as a testimony of the issue.
Well, I know, Frank, a number of years ago, I sail on sailboats, and I noticed that my balance wasn't as good as it was when I was younger, and I wasn't keeping up with some of the guys on our race team. And one of the things that was suggested was yoga. So I hired a private yoga instructor. I learned breathing techniques and some basic yoga moves. And it was amazing because there was one day I had an hour of yoga with my instructor. And I had to go in to see my doctor for something, renew a prescription. And they took my blood pressure, and it was like 106 over 67. They took it three times because they'd never seen it this low. And they said, what did you do? Did you eat something? Did you do something? I said, no, I just got done with yoga. And they said, oh, that explains it. So one of the things in your brochures on your site, you talk about some of the benefits of yoga practitioners: decreased blood pressure, increased respiratory efficiency, improved musculoskeletal flexibility, which is one thing I was going for, improved posture, strength and resiliency, improved immune function, decrease in pain, improved somatic and kinesthetic awareness, increased steadiness, depth perception. All of these benefits, why do you think this is not more pronounced or more recommended by the medical field?
I think that it's like everything else, it goes through evolutionary process. The medical profession, pharmaceutical profession, is pretty much built on basic free enterprise axiom. The first element in the business of health is to make money to stay in business. That's, you know, to assume that the hospitals are there for helping you to get healthy first. No, the hospital's first issue is to stay in business and manage the operation. And then part of that operation is to get you fixed. But you already have a problem, and how to fix temporarily or permanently the problem that you have. So because of that, the axiom is that conditions are changing slowly to get less and less business to the business that is in business, such as the health industry. And there are a lot of elements that play into that, and politics is one of it, and economy is one of it, attitude is one of it. And plus, yoga is not a Western tradition. It's an Eastern tradition. It's a totally different mindset. Yoga is basically of three elements. Number one, the calmness of the mind. Number two, the control of the breathing. And only number three is the posture. It was invented by historical facts to calm the mind, to relax, to put one into the level of more relaxed, calm position. The second one was how you do that through your breathing, and then how you help your breathing to be controlled through posture. So somewhere in the Western world, a kind of thing turned around or upside down, and it became posture, the element of the most importance, and then came only breathing, and the mindset is only the third one. But nevertheless, whatever it is, anything, especially in the older age, that helps your breathing, that helps your posture, that helps your mind stress-free or relatively stress-free, is an incredible preparation for good health. It is an incredible preventive medicine.
You know, you developed something that you call Silver Age Yoga. And let's talk about this, because this is a program specifically designed for seniors. And I know here, just looking at your website, there are a number of classes that are offered all over San Diego. What is the difference with Silver Age Yoga? Does it differ than any of the other styles or types of yoga? What makes it unique?
It's unique that it's designed for limited capacity of performance. The yoga postures are plenty and basically all the same. The difference is how you perform it. The interpretation of the posture into a physical form of performance, and it depends on how old you are, it depends on how flexible you are, how strong you are. And the one that was neglected in the development or the evolution of yoga in the United States, but they owned seniors. Nobody cared about the seniors. Yoga is the new powerful game to be taught. Well, it took some time, and I fell into that era when yoga was slowly moving into across the different regions and segments of the population, age-wise speaking. And it was time to develop at least one format, one style which fits those who are old, who are fragile, who don't have the strength and the balance and the flexibility. And that's how Silver Age Yoga was born. This was 13 years ago. There was a little bit more background to it. I escaped from Hungary by hijacking the first commercial airliner. I have to admit to that because that's what it was, that my book and film is all about. That's coming. And somewhere in West Germany, not knowing where we are and ready to die if we have to, because if it's the wrong country, we are executed. Anyway, the first thing that I saw was the American flag, and that gave me freedom. That's when I became free at age 25. And then later on, 40 years later, I came to a point when I could pay back to that society, the reciprocation, give back for freedom that I got, something I owed this society. That gave me a gift of freedom. And that's how my wife and I talked about it. And so she said, why don't we form something for seniors and try to make it free? And that's how it was born, as a reciprocity of my freedom to be part of this free society of the United States. And from there on, it just flew into a huge organization, 300 some students, 300 some teachers around, 15,000 plus free yoga classes delivered in all in 13 years of its existence. I was the executive director for 10 years, and then I had to turn over to somebody because I got just too busy in other things in my life.
You know, one thing that you mentioned there, this is a program that's designed specifically for seniors. So obviously some of the moves that somebody in their 20s and their teens or 30s and 40s may go through various yoga forms and movements much easier than, let's say, somebody that's 65 or age 70. So when you developed this program, you took into consideration that they may be less flexible, less mobile, and that you developed these poses so it made them easier to do. Now, you have these classes here. What about, Frank, a workbook or a DVD for somebody that, let's say, doesn't live here or can't find a class wherever they live? What can they do?
Yes, I believe that the organization still have Silver Age Yoga 1, Silver Age Yoga 2 DVDs that are available on the website, are available from the organization. My wife and I have developed those postures, actually all the postures in the Silver Age Yoga portfolio were designed, and some of them even named by us, such as windshield wiper for the movement of the arms, such as cat and cow, such as wash the dishes or the shower knob, all kind of names that relate to something that you do in your regular life, so you can relate the movement to that movement, what a windshield wiper does, for instance.
You know, one thing that comes to mind, Frank, that I think yoga has been very beneficial, I know it made me more flexible and keep up with the younger guys on my boat, is that one of the problems that seniors often run into is that inflexibility. You always hear about somebody falling, injuring their hip, breaking a hip, or something like that. So maintaining flexibility is just as important as, let's say, cardiovascular exercise or even weightlifting to strengthen the bones. And you can do a bit of that strength training also with yoga. Can you speak about that for a moment?
Probably the list of those benefits that comes from yoga, I would list them in probably in that order of importance. First is breathing. Second is balance. Third is flexibility. Fourth is strength. And above all and parallel with that is the state of mind. The flexibility is very important. Balance is very important because so many accidents happen by losing your balance, falling, and your bones are no longer 20 years old bones. They are 65 year old bones, and they act like 65 year old bones. Do they crack? They break. And just the other day it happened that my wife has mini ear disease, which is the inner ear balance. And the other day she said, I'm falling, and I tried to catch her and I couldn't, and I fell with her rolling down on stairs, and we got up and walked away.
Absolutely amazing. Let me ask you this. I know that doctors and people in the medical profession will often say before you start any kind of exercise program, it would be great that you check with your doctor first to make sure you're in physical condition. You may want to start out slowly, and especially if you haven't done anything. Are there any prerequisites, Frank, before starting a yoga program? Like, let's say I'm not very flexible. I'm not used to doing exercise. Should an individual see their doctor before they start a program like this?
We recommend that highly. We did not make it condition of the class attending a class, but in most instances we had a statement to sign that my doctor didn't oppose to it or recommend it, especially if they had one of the major senior issues that they had to face with, such as hip replacement. Then definitely we needed a doctor agreement, a doctor's release of that person to come to class. Most of that condition and the enforcement, quote unquote, there is depending on the teachers and our classes that we were developing teachers for Silver Age Yoga certification. That became part of our instruction, part of our portfolio, making sure that the senior students are aware of the danger that they are facing if they are losing control of the movement. So it's kind of a narrow alley to walk, a thin ice to walk on, because on one hand, you want to deliver benefit for which you would have to create challenges, physical and mental challenges. And on the same token, you cannot go beyond that because you're going to hurt people. So that's why we have same class, can have a chair, some segment of the same class, people who are doing the postures in chairs, some others doing in standing, and some others doing on the floor. That's why the challenge is relatively large for a Silver Age Yoga teacher, because she has to take charge of 25 students, and then 10 of them are standing, 10 of them on the floor, and 5 of them on the chair, or whatever combination. And they all have to do the same posture to the different extent of the posture. So it's challenging for the teacher, more so than regular. We go to a gym, we go to a club or Pacific Athletic Club or whatever, and then you get a class there, and then you don't really have to be cognizant of the fact who is, how old the person or the members are of the class. You don't have to be worried about their, basically, what their condition is. You have to just trust that they're going to know that. But it's not the same in the Silver Age Yoga classes I described.
Let me talk about the video that you have. Is this clear enough an instruction that somebody that is not familiar with yoga, maybe not be as flexible, or they've never done yoga before, can they watch this video, and is it safe for them to begin with these movements? In other words, do you start with basic things people can do and then move up to maybe as you get more conditioned?
My recommendation would be, and has been, that come to class first, get the foundation, get the basic element, get the understanding of the philosophy, get your control, your breath, your stress, your posture movement, and then supplement this with practices at home for which you can have the video. As a matter of fact, we did a video series that was on for at least 8 years on the public service television in San Diego, one at 8 o'clock in the morning, one at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we developed that for the County of San Diego, which was, again, on the public network for at least 8 years. It still may be on. I'm not very familiar with what is happening now, but during the time I was the executive director, this was part of the public service television network. And by the way, I have to mention here to those listeners also, believe that this is a program that's worth to be supported, that October 29th, the usual fundraiser at the Del Mar Powerhouse on the beach, which is going to be at 5:30. This is a Thursday evening. It's only $45 per person. It all goes to support the organization. That gets no government support, strictly individual donations and individual support. We don't charge for the classes. The classes are free, and we have, I think, in the San Diego area, we have 24, 25, depending on which day you count.
Well, it's nice that they're free. So, Frank, basically, even though you offer an instructional DVD video, you would recommend, if all possible, start and begin with classes. I want to read something off your website. This is a testimonial from a lady by the name of Nadine, and she said, "I'm 55 and could barely walk into my first Silver Age yoga class. I had long-term back problems that were debilitating. I started by using chair yoga and could barely do many of the moves. After several sessions, I improved enough to move to the floor, Little by little, with the gentle movements and attentive instructors, I finally recovered and am now able to hike, bike ride, and do all my other favorite physical activities. So, once again, this was apparently somebody that had debilitating back problems, and the fact that you've been diagnosed with Parkinson's and nobody can even detect that is a testimony to the health benefits of yoga and maintaining some flexibility. Frank, if our listeners would like to find out more about Silver Age Yoga, I'm going to give out your website, if you wouldn't mind. It's called Silver Age Yoga. That's all one word, silverageyoga.org. That's silverageyoga.org. And I can just tell you, Frank, for anybody out there listening, whether you have Parkinson's, you have back issues, flexibility issues, or even blood pressure.
Or maybe you want to live a little bit longer, huh?
Yeah, and healthier. I mean, what good is it if you spend your whole life saving up for retirement, you head into retirement, and you suffer from poor health? And this is just one more tool in the arsenal and the toolkits that we have to maintain a healthy lifestyle. Frank, I want to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income, and kudos to you for what you've done in helping seniors and also making this no charge for it. It's basically free, and I applaud you for that work.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the exposure that your good program has and offers to seniors, and I'm glad to see that yoga is one of those that your program offers to bring more information about. And all I can urge people, whether they have Parkinson or not, join Silver Age Yoga. Support it, because it's beneficial for everyone, even those who don't need it.
I couldn't agree more. Once again, the name of the site is called silverageyoga.org. silverageyoga.org. We've been talking with one of its founders, Frank Isaac. Frank, as always, thanks for joining us on the program.
Enjoyed it a lot. It was really exceptional. Thank you so much.
You know, one of the things about exercise, Jim, is that, for example, when I don't do it, I feel uncomfortable. You know, you just get into the routine of it. And there are all sorts of exercises that you can do and plans, but the most important thing is to do something. A long time ago, when I started to bike ride, I was in my 30s, and I convinced Carol to let me buy a high-end road bike because I'd save the gas. It would pay for itself in less than a year if I rode to work. And I says, you know, I can't help becoming old, but I can help becoming decrepit.
So, one of the things that Frank was talking about there, one of the things that I've experienced, I injured myself doing Pilates earlier and developed sciatica, and I was able through yoga movements to get rid of the sciatica problem. But, you know, John, as we age, and I first noticed this when I was doing sailboat racing, that as I got older, I wasn't as flexible. I didn't have the balance of the younger guys on our racing team. And so I wanted to develop that flexibility. So what I started to do with a trainer is incorporate not just weightlifting and the cardio, which are very important, but also flexibility and balance moves, so that my exercise program was more well-rounded. And I can't tell you the health benefits of doing yoga, Pilates, or whatever kind of exercise you do, but, you know, mixing it up, because our bodies get used to one form of exercise, and it's really important to basically sort of trick your body and don't let it get used to doing one type of exercise. I have a good friend, and he's been doing the same exercises, the same level of weights, and the same routine for 5 or 6 years. He wonders why he hasn't improved, but everybody has their own little thing to do. Anyway, check out that program. They do have a DVD, and as he mentioned, the best thing to do is start out with class, and especially if you have any back ailments or anything like that. But this is just one more tool in that toolkit to make you a healthier and help you live much longer. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.